Hello, friends. Welcome to Storytime with Janet Keeler. I'm Janet, a former newspaper journalist and now a professor of journalism at Eckerd College, but I just happen to be in love with children's picture books. This podcast is for grandparents, parents, caretakers, babysitters, big brothers and sisters, kids of all ages who want to share the joy of reading children's books aloud. I love being in the studio with great people, and today I'm absolutely giddy that Matt McGee has joined me for story time today. Matt is an actor, director, producer, writer, and just all-around amazing theater guy. He's one of Tampa Bay's most well-known and well-loved theater professionals. And when he's not on stage or directing, he's the director of marketing and communication at Freefall Theater in St. Pete. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Great introduction. That's what I need everyone to tell everybody about me. I need to have you come with me.
Everybody needs a hype girl.
They really do. They really do.
I'm really thankful that you could take time out of your busy schedule. And as director of Free Falls Death Trap, which is running through December 7th. So how's that going?
You know, really well. It's an old classic play. It's a lot of fun. I really thought we would do the play mostly because I thought it was such a well-known title. But we're finding that audiences don't know how the story goes, and that makes it a lot more fun for them because they don't see the twists and turns coming. I don't think I've seen as reactive an audience as I have with this one. Sure, there are a lot of laughs in Death Trap. There's a lot of gasps and jump scares, probably more laughs than jump scares. But also people are reacting to the plot twists.
Oh,
like
good.
You hear people going, oh, well, you know, and leaning forward as opposed to sitting back in the chair. So all that's really wonderful.
That's good. I've got my ticket, so I'll be seeing it in the next week or so.
So
I've asked Matt to join us today to sort of talk about reading children's books in a theatrical way.
Yeah.
And I was hoping you would share some tips about how to put on a show of sorts. So how is a children's book sort of like a play script?
You know, what's interesting, the longer I've done theater, the more I've learned from all the different people that I've worked with, even just here in St. Pete, like Eric Davis, and who's the artistic director of Freefall Theater, or Stephanie Goulart, who used to run American Stage, David Jenkins at JobSite, Carla Hartley at StageWorks. What I've learned from them as directors is sometimes simple is a lot better than over the top. Less can be more. And I think when we're reading, sometimes when we approach scripts, I'm an actor who does this. I'm playing mostly comedic roles, mostly character roles, sort of audacious out there characters. I tend to start rehearsal throwing everything I have at the wall and then have people kind of pull me back. So when you look at a children's book, I think people think, oh, if I read this book, I'm going to have to really sell it really hard. I'm going to have to do a lot of voices, character voices, which I will do some today when I'm reading the book. But that not a lot of that is necessary. Mostly it's just about telling the story, and I think that's what we forget. I think sometimes people in the theater think of all the little things, all the little details, the craft, if you will. You know, I've always been an actor that hasn't always talked about the process because I think most people don't find it that interesting. You do what you have to do to get to the place you need to be. So approaching this is not really unlike approaching how we put together a production when you're doing it really solidly, very professionally, and with a lot of subtlety.
Who's the tougher audience, kids or the paying patrons?
Kids. I mean, both are really hard, and sometimes there's not really a difference between the two as time goes on. But kids, you know, kids now. You know, I even see this a lot with some, you know, my family. You know, I have nieces and nephews, and a lot of times if they're being unruly, you know, a phone or a tablet is given to them. So, you know, if you're trying to read a book to a kid and you're trying to keep their attention, you know, you have to compete with tablets and YouTube. And because kids love YouTube. You know, there's all right. These little, you know, YouTube and TikTok now has like children's kind of programming. Mm-hmm. I think there's a Blippi and there's some other things. I can't remember all the names, but kids are glued to that. So how do you do that when you're reading to them? And it really is all about sort of the highs and lows and finding how the story, you know, begins, finding the middle and how it ends, finding those three acts of every piece because everything sort of has that kind of flow.
So to do that, though, you really have to pay attention. You have to read the book a few times yourself and get the idea of where it's, you know, where the peaks and lows and the the drama is and that kind of thing.
And absolutely. And just like a play, I did a lot of research on the author too and some of his other works. That's always important, the research you do, or in the theater we call it dramaturgy, you know, the when you get all of the background on the characters or the time they're in. I did learn a lot about Mikey Pleese, who is a very interesting sort of eccentric in many ways. He's British. And I really thought, would I read The Cafe at the Edge of the Woods in a British accent? Doesn't need that at all. Again, that was what I call gilding the lily. Not necessary. but I also I practiced it. Not a lot, but I did work on it since you had given me the book ahead of time. I did take a look at it. I did try to kind of like – I mean, for instance, there's little things like – the main characters are named Rene and Glumfoot. And a lot of people, you could say Rene because it would work, but the way it's spelled and the way I've heard the author say the name, it's Rene and Glumfoot. So those little details and those little special things that you can find in researching, those are going to make the difference for the storytelling.
So no pressure, parents and grandparents out there,
right?
So you know what? What I think would be fun is for you to read the book, and mm-hmm. then we can talk kind of about some of the techniques you used since you did this research. So normally I ask the guest to bring a book, a favorite book or something of that they want to bring. But of course, I said, can you read this, please? I found this book at a sweet little bookstore in Tallahassee when we evacuated last year from Milton.
Oh, wow.
And I just loved it. I loved the illustrations and being, you know, a former food writer. I loved the food angle of it. And so I really wanted to hear you read it because I've read it a few times. I just don't think it sounds very good when I do it. So do you want to just start? And
absolutely.
Then we'll talk about how you approached it.
Absolutely. Now, for those listening right now, we'll show some of the pictures. But the idea behind this, the author, Mikey Pleese, who also draws all the beautiful illustrations, and they're very, very – I mean, what a talent this person is.
I know, to be able to write it and draw it.
Mm. But Rene and Glumfoot are characters that make appearances throughout his work, and they are based on his wife and son. And it's very funny because Rene is this sort of auburn-haired woman who's, you know, quite well put together. And of course, his son is represented by this, really what I could call Glumfoot is sort of this tiny little gremlin, this little monster, which I think is really cute. And I guess they played together as when they were playing together with their son, they would play cafe. And the author would play a rather unruly restaurant patron. And that's where most of this comes in. So we'll get started from the beginning, a very good place to start. So Rene and Glumfoot in The Cafe at the Edge of the Woods by Mikey Pleese. Rene dreamed of fine cuisine, and so she saved up every bean, then built a building beam by beam, The Cafe at the Edge of the Woods. A single applicant replied, "Suppose you'll do then," Rene sighed. The waiter's name was Glumfoot. Above the door there hung a bell to welcome in new clientele. But every morning silence fell. No customers came calling. "Perhaps this plot is the worst spot. A business plan I sure had not. My hopes and dreams will turn to rot." The waiter went out walking. He soon returned with company, who stooped and stumbled clumsily. The man was taller than a tree. "A customer," croaked Glumfoot. Rene gawped and gasped in awe. Knuckles dragged upon the floor. Tusks stuck from a lower jaw. The customer was an ogre. "Today's special is gravlax with saffron sautéed sticklebacks." "I'll grab a bag of pickled bats." "Pickled what's?" said Rene. "The truffle stew is rather nice. It comes with peas and long grain rice. Bats and slugs and battered mice."
"Slugs and mice?" gasped Rene. "Perhaps you'd like the cheddar tart topped with chopped artichoke heart."
"A bag of bats that smells like fart."
It smells like what?" shrieked Rene. That is it. No more. I've had enough. I won't serve such disgusting stuff. Rene stormed off in a huff. One moment, sir, said Glumfoot. I knew this was an awful plan. Pack my porcelain and pan. Glumfoot, fetch a moving van. The waiter leaned and whispered. The ogre's had a change of heart. He'd love to try the cheddar tart. And all the rest, best make a start. His appetite's enormous. Renee's hand went to her chest. Her heart was pumping through her vest. He'll have nothing but the very best. Glumfoot, fetch the saucepan. With fire and oil and swirling blade, pastry puffed, mushroom sautéed, each dish delicately displayed on top of Glumfoot's trolley. But soon as Renee had turned her back, Glumfoot shuffled this and that, so when it reached the ogre's mat, everything looked different. The tart got flipped onto its back, so it looked like a pickled bat. The saffron swirls and sticklebacks became the battered mice. The truffle stew was shuffled, too, to make it look like slugs in glue. The rice became maggot fondue. The whole lot looked disgusting. Renee glanced up as Glumfoot wheeled this ogre his gigantic meal. She held her breath. Would this appeal? The ogre looked suspicious. Then, with a roar, the ogre ate every scrap on every plate. He burped and mumbled, "That was great." Renee was delighted. She burst out of the kitchen door. "You like it? Would you like some more? I'd take a plate of that stuff. Your maggots were delicious." Maggots! On her heel, she spun. "Glumfoot, tell, what have you done?" Renee turned from peach to plum. The ogre interrupted. "I never knew that slugs could be so crispy, yet so tingly, with subtle hints of salty sea." Rene's mouth hung open. "And who knew that old bat could taste nothing like some household waste?"
That would be the miso paste, said Rene, standing straighter.
"Thanks for that. I'll come again and tell my family and friends. There's lots of folks around these ends who'd like this sort of litter." Knuckles dragged toward the door. A smile creased the tusk-lined jaw. And on the table, Rene saw a pile of gold nuggets.
"From now I shall make the soup, and you shall write the menu."
And from that day forth, above the door, the bell tinkled as more and more creatures from legends and lore came looking for some breakfast. And Rene cooked up fine cuisine, while Glumfoot's menus raised a scream. They truly were the perfect team in the cafe at the edge of the woods.
Ooh, standing yeah. O, standing O. I loved it. Thank you so much. I've been waiting to hear that read beautifully like that for a year. So much fun to read, but so much fun to listen to. There's words in there that are fun to say.
Oh, absolutely.
Sticklebacks.
One thing I like about this book is it doesn't really talk down to children at all. I mean, there's some things that may be out of their vocabulary that they may want to ask about. Words like, you know, nincompoop and,
right.
you know, and all these descriptions of food.
Right, the miso paste.
These kids don't really, you know this. The saffron swirls and sticklebacks and the truffle stew, and you know they're going to have lots of fun questions, and I think that's really great too, you know.
But this is a rhyming book.
It is.
And I think sometimes when you read a rhyming book, we get into this sing-song thing. And I didn't – that's how I felt when I read it aloud myself a couple times. I thought, oh, you're just like – you know.
And you don't have to.
Right.
It's not going to hurt anything if you don't. It's like when people do Shakespeare. You know, in Shakespeare, there's prose and poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see a really great production of a Shakespeare play, you don't want to hear it sing-song. And it doesn't – you often think, oh, wow, that you suddenly go – in a Shakespeare play, you should go, oh, wait, is that rhyming? You shouldn't notice it right away.
You shouldn't notice it at all. Oh, okay.
And so, because it's just actors telling the story and saying the words in a way that, you know, make things understandable. And sometimes going ba-da, ba-da, ba-da
yeah.
doesn't always help, you know, how
no,
it comes
and it
out.
Kind of obscures, like, the funness of the story in a way, because you get in listening, you're getting into that pattern. You're mm-hmm. like, well, okay, here it comes. And, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think sometimes with this, you know, it's so important to sound like a storyteller. For a long time, there's a company called Hatch Baby. And it is a it's like a little device by the bed that almost works like an Alexa, but it's for kids to sleep. And you ask them to tell you a story.
Right.
And I did the voice of Old Joe the zookeeper for a couple years. And I learned a lot through that, working with their team. And actually some of the – you know, Gloria Munoz was one of the writers. Mm. And, of course –
the poet.
Yeah, the poet. Mm-hmm, and her husband, you know, who was part of La Lucha, he would do like the music and stuff. And I would work with him. And we would talk with the people who started that company about what kind of voices were appealing to children. And I really believe when I was playing Old Joe the Zookeeper, and at times during this, I really try to emulate. There's a famous voiceover artist. I don't know his name, but remember the Smucker's commercials
yes.
from the 80s and 90s yes. where he went, with a name like Smucker's, it's got to be good.
It has to be good.
You know, and the way he said Smucker's.
Right, right.
It made a big impression on me as a kid, you know, and I think in millions of other people who would buy Smucker's because of that great ad.
Right, right.
But I did start to realize as I got older and was – doing voiceover or doing reading things, or even just the experience I had with reading short children's stories on that particular app. There is a certain sense of sort of this kind of voice you kind of take on that kind of is warm and welcoming, you know.
Right,
And I don't want to say it's supposed to lull people to sleep, but that would be a great effect of it too sometimes.
It's not total NPR.
No, absolutely. and you know, I've seen so many – you know, I've gotten to read to children before in many different capacities. And,
right.
I think that also I play to the audience too. If they're kids that really want something extra,
yeah.
I may you know, really put my back into it. Did you ever hear about that? Alan Rickman ran into a friend I think at Harrods or one of the big department mm-hmm. stores, and he said, "Oh, look, I bought the new book." And he was like, "Wow, great! You know, bought the new Harry Potter book."
Right.
And he goes, "You know, when I read to my kids, I don't really put my back into it when I play you." And he goes, "Well, don't worry, I don't really either. It was just a joke."
Yeah.
But you know, that's something, you know, Harry Potter, like reading Harry Potter to kids, you kind of — I've done that before, or sections, and that is something they expect you to sound somewhat like the characters,
right.
you know, because
right.
of just
and there's so many characters
that powerful
in that.
IP,
yeah.
and so
yep.
then you're really having to practice.
Right? Would you when you say you're kind of reading the audience a little bit, even if it's kids, maybe even just one kid, are you stopping ever?
Sure.
If they say, "What is that?"
Absolutely.
Or, yeah, read that again.
If they, yeah, oh, they, absolutely. Or mm-hmm. if you know, I'm reading it and they react, because you know, kids love gross stuff.
Right.
So, and especially the fart would get a huge laugh you
right.
know, with kids.
You got to pause there.
Yeah.
Right.
Honestly, it would get a huge laugh with adults too.
Fart, right.
you know, farts are funny if you're 9 or 99. But that would get a huge reaction
right.
with the kids. And the descriptions of the gross food, they, if they're really into it, they will make noise. They'll go, "Oh, ah." It's
yeah.
almost like what we were talking about with Death Trap. It's like when you're watching or feeling an audience really react to things, and they sort of forget that they're not just a passive audience.
Right.
They
right.
go for it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, this book must be hugely popular because he's already got a second one out. I think it came out in September, and it's called The Cave Down Wind of the Cafe.
Can you
so,
imagine?
Yeah, I can. I can't imagine. But anyway, thank you so much, Matt, for coming in and reading
oh,
this book to us. And
what a pleasure.
And indulging me, because I really wanted to hear
it.
You read it. So you can see more of Matt's talents as a director at Death Trap at Freefall, which goes through December 7th.
That's right.
You can get more information at freefalltheater.com. So join us in December when I'm going to be talking about holiday gift books for children.
Oh, wow.
We've got a lot of gifts. Books are good gifts, so we're going to give you some ideas.
I think they are, too. I loved getting them as a kid, you know?
Yep. So. Yep. And do you like someone to write in them?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in
yeah.
fact, I don't see people do that as much anymore, but I love the idea of opening up. My great aunt Kathy would give me a new Stephen King book every year for Christmas.
Isn't
you know,
that
one
nice?
Of the hardback.
And
when I go back to look at them,
I know.
She's written
you remember, and you remember her, and that's really nice.
That's really nice.
Thanks again, Matt.
My pleasure.
So until next time, this has been Storytime with Jana Keeler.